Hello, everybody. J.J. Cooper, Carlos Colazo, Ben Badler, the Baseball America Hot Sheet Show. And I just got to be honest, this is one where we're going to try to cram about 3 hours into 30 minutes because the reality of it is this is our time of year. We just got done with the 2026 Major League Baseball Draft. It's something that we work on year round. Yes, we already have our 2027 mock-up. We can tell you all about the 27s, but we'll do that another time. We're going to talk about the 26th draft that just wrapped up as we are talking to you all today. Thank you for joining us on the Hot Sheet Show on Baseball America. Please subscribe to the channel on YouTube. That helps other people see it. And if you are watching us on Twitter or somewhere else, go to YouTube. You can leave comments and we will try to answer those. Please, we want to get your questions. We want to take those questions and answer what you want to hear on the show. But let's just get right into it. So let's go to our first move. Meep, meep. 20 rounds are done. The draft is in the books. And I'm just going to let the draft experts here kind of run with this. So, Carlos, I feel like that it's fair to say it was as expected at the top, and then let's get wild. And it got a lot wilder when you got down into the back of the top 10, and then especially when you got beyond it. But what, like, overarching thoughts, what stood out to you? What will you, you know, understand, you know, kind of about the 2026 draft, that kind of the theme of this draft?
I think the overall theme of this draft for me has kind of become teams pursuing contact hitters at the top, beyond Rochelowski, Grady Emerson, Von Lackey, going 1, 2, 3, where they belong, where we had them ranked. We had Rochelowski and Grady Emerson ID'd a year ago at this time as the clear top players in their respective classes, Rochelowski on the college side and overall in this class, Grady Emerson as the leader in his high school class for 3 or 4 years, Ben, I'm pretty sure it was. They held serve throughout the spring and really proved that they were the top players in this class and were rewarded for that with the first and second overall picks. I think as we worked through the draft, some of the hitters who went maybe a little bit higher than we thought they would go went higher because of their contact skills. Some of the hitters who slid a little bit, I think slid because of the swing and miss questions that they come with in their profile. So that was kind of the through line of this year's draft for me. It really felt like the first year where clearly a lot of teams were coveting and prioritizing bat to ball skills for hitters. And I think it was also the most hitter heavy draft we've had at the top. We set a record for the most picks in a draft with just one pitcher off the board, Jackson Flora, the only pitcher at the top of this draft until we got down to Gio Rojas at 16 overall. So a few fun things to chat about at the top, and I'm sure we can go in any number of directions you guys want to go from there.
I just want to ask Ben the same question. What stood out to you most? What surprised you most about, you know, or the, what was the theme of this draft to you?
Yeah, I agree with a lot of what Carlos said. Also, just the challenge of sign for teams that want to sign high school players, being able to sign the players that they want. There's a lot of really good high school players in this class that are going to end up playing college baseball because they had, I don't even want to say high asking prices, just reasonable asking prices. But you just get to a certain point in the draft after 3 or 4 rounds where a team just can only fit so many players into their bonus pool, given the allotments that they have. And then at that point, they just kind of shift gears toward college players who are less expensive, more signable. So I think if you're looking at the draft and saying, oh, the teams really value these college players, I don't know that's actually the case. It's just they're a lot easier for teams to sign after a certain point.
Carlos, along that, like even by the back of the top 10, we started to see some picks that I would say were a little bit of different than how our rankings had them lined up. Is that shocking, or is that more of a reflection of how there was more ambiguity about the rankings, about that second tier?
I actually think the only like real surprise name was Zion Rose inside the first 10. Every other name in that range, Jackson Flores in our top tier, Derek Curiel was in that next tier, Eric Booth Jr. in the top tier, Drew Burris, AJ Gracia, Tyler Bell rounding out the top 10. Like none of those names are off the board names. And even Zion Rose, who I do think if we want to talk about like why he went this high, I think he is the most surprising name based on our rankings. but we had even heard whispers of him potentially going in a good spot. And I was saying, I'm not sure how much of this you guys heard before I got cut off, but Jacob Lombard to me is maybe the most surprising in terms of where he went. We had him ranked number 5 overall. He goes 14 to the Marlins. But I think to Ben's point, once we start seeing some of the signing numbers for these players, it is going to start to make a lot more sense. I think with baseball's draft, you really do have to emphasize it's not a hard slotting system. These players are not always going in the order of talent directly. And we will get a lot more context and understanding of how these teams really prioritize the talent and lined up the talent once we get those signing bonus figures.
So, Ben, you talked about this. This was a, you know, we see kind of the balance between college and high school switch kind of almost from round to round in this. We did see, I think, some examples where we saw teams take a college guy first, but it really was, in a lot of cases, to pay a high school guy later on. The Braves, I think, did that to some extent. The Red Sox clearly did that. You're kind of our high school expert who kind of watches that class for years in the lead up. Who are a couple of the ones that kind of stood out to you as far as teams maybe pushing a guy down as far as, like Carlos just explained, draft pick wise, but not where they're going to go value wise or not where they're going to go bonus wise?
Well, I really like what the Braves did overall with their draft. They took AJ Gracia at 9th overall. I valued him as a top 10 overall pick. I even like him more, and I'm maybe in the minority in this group, but I like him even more than Drew Burris, who's another college outfielder who went ahead of him in the draft. So I really like him in terms of the hitting ability, the swing decisions, the contact skills, just the overall track record that he's produced over 3 years in the ACC. And then we'll see what, again, we'll see, like Carlos said, we'll see what the bonus ends up being. Did they save money under a slot? I'm presuming whether it's him or Carter Beck, they did, because they got a lot of good high school arms in the rest of this class. And that's a strength of this class, especially on the high school side. A lot of really good high school pitching to choose from. They got Caden McCarthy from Vermont, who's been flirting with triple digits, super young for the class, a reclass from the 2027 class, good pitchability, a lot of good tailing life on his changeup. Jensen Hirschhorn was totally dominant last summer. He's like 6'7", right-handed pitcher, good body control for that size, really good stuff. Cole Dennis, another young right-handed pitcher from this class, pop-up guy this spring, has been up to, I think, 96, 97. Tyson Grolkowski, big arm from Wisconsin. Jack Brenner, a really good catcher that they got out of Wisconsin in the 7th round. I really like the high school players that the Braves were able to really load up on in this class and not just be so high school heavy after taking AJ Gracia, especially, and then Carter Beck right after him from the college side with their first couple picks.
Yeah. The more we saw the Braves draft unfold, I feel like it was becoming more and more of a BA in-house favorite. And I do think the Braves targeted this draft and hit its strengths. And they also seem to target their own player development strengths we've seen over the years. Carter Beck has this really fascinating multi-sport, high-end athleticism background. So while I would expect that pick to be a bit of a money saver, I like the pick on talent as well, just generally when you look at the other collection of high school players they got. And I would assume you're going to see them save money early, which the Braves routinely do, pay these high school players in the middle rounds big overslot deals. And then you also see how they're trying to make the savings and the money work in this draft when they went college senior in rounds 8, 9, and 10. I would expect big savings at those picks. Even in the 11th round, they took a big shot on a player like Ryan Barker, who was an up arrow, really projectable, speedy, contact-oriented hitter in the 11th round. So the Braves have been one of the more impressive teams in recent years in terms of getting value out of high school players later in the draft. And I think they took a lot of really exciting upside plays in this year's class. And to Uncle Ted's comment, I always appreciate Uncle Ted in the chats, one of our regular watchers. I don't know if I would agree with no such thing as pitching prospects. Seth Hernandez, he looked pretty good at the Futures game. We just saw him a year ago. So you got to take pitching prospects if you actually want to have arms at some point.
So I did want to ask you, when we talk about the most surprising pick of the first round, I think there's a pretty obvious answer with the Red Sox and what they did. Carlos, explain the Red Sox draft and kind of how it was pretty unusual.
Yeah, I think this is probably the single most surprising pick of the first round, again, because we kind of had some understanding that Zion Rose had a chance to go a little bit higher. So Jake Schaffner being the pick at number 20 for the Red Sox, we had him ranked near the 70 to 100 range. On our board, we viewed him as more of a third round talent. The Red Sox take him in the first. And again, like our conversation with the Braves, they're probably going to save money here. They had some big high school plays that they took later on the second day. Martin Shalhar in the ninth round is a really interesting one. Jace Matajinsky in the third round. Those are toolsy high school players with upside who are going to cost a little bit of money. I would say, though, whereas the Braves are saving potentially, I mean, we don't know exactly with AJ Gracia. I don't believe that bonus is out yet. But I just feel like Gracia on talent fit in the range where he was selected. Jake Schaffner, I do feel like there was a range where he could have gone and made more sense. But I actually think Owen Hull, another North Carolina player they took in the second round, is a better prospect. We had him ranked higher. He would have even made more sense to me in the first round. So just a little bit unusual with how the Red Sox did their draft this year. I think sometimes you see teams taking players who are a little bit surprising. If their board kind of blows up in front of them, a few players that they are really in on go one after another. And so you maybe have to pivot to more of a backup option because you don't have the signability dialed with some of the other best players available on your board. That potentially could have happened with the Red Sox, but a lot of this draft is going to rest on Jake Schaffner either being better than we expect him to be or really hitting on one or both of Matajinsky and Martin Shalhar.
We already have a ton of comments in. We're going to set aside more time than usual for that. So when we get back, we're going to take your questions and answer them and give you as much insight as we can right after this.
Many people have this problem. I want to eat healthy. I have the willpower. I don't have the time and the organization. I need help. What do you do?
I mean, you go to Factor. I got two boys that are looking for the gains, and they always come in the house looking for food. Now they have actual healthy food that is great for them. And you know what? It's ready in the fridge for them to pop in and make it right away.
And they have meals built around your goals. It could be weight loss, overall nutrition, gains, more protein, fresh, never frozen, over 100 rotating weekly meals, including globally inspired flavors like Mediterranean and Asian. I get all kinds of different salads from Factor that I love. Quick, easy. They can be ready in 2 minutes. Head to factormeals.com/foul50off and use code FOUL50OFF to get 50% off and free daily greens per box with new subscription only while supplies last until 9/27/2026.
We are back and we are loaded with questions. So let's just jump straight into them, teeing up first a question about the Pirates. Question asked, Pirates really leaned heavily into upside of the last three drafts, not saying their draft won't pan out, but the safe high floor approach is a bit of a head scratcher, according to Jays 4946. Carlos.
Yeah, I really love this Pirates draft. I think if I was to pick one class that I'm most excited about, it probably would be the Pirates. Now, granted, a lot of that has to do with fan favorite Derek Curiel going fifth overall. I think me and Ben both had kind of our college outfield guys going a good spot, so that was fun to see. But even beyond that, to me, this Pirates draft really looks like a no-nonsense, straight-up talent play. And if you don't think that maybe that's the most high upside profiles, I could understand that if you've like fallen in love with that sort of profile. Guys like Derek Curiel, Aiden Ruiz in the second round, Chris Rembert at 51 and with their supplemental pick, Jason DeCaro in the third round. Like none of those guys scream like super high upside, super toolsy, but I think all of them make a ton of sense on talent where they're at. I think Curiel is maybe one of the best pure hitters in the class. I think Aiden Ruiz at 44 is great value as one of the better defensive shortstops in the class with offensive tools as well. Chris Rembert, same thing. Really high confidence in his hitting ability. I like the fact that the Pirates took a lot of hitters that have contact ability, a chance to play at up the middle positions. Even Andrew Giles in the fourth round. I like that pick as well. You keep going down. And if you look at the Pirates draft in connection with the BA 500, which is how we're viewing the talent of this class, I think they got a ton of value here. Looking at the 14th round, DeMarcus Rideout Carter from Canada, I think that's an interesting upside play. Maybe if you want to look at a projection player, Grant Govell in the 16th round, if they get him signed, I think this is just a really, really deep class. And I think at a certain point, if you're the Pirates, you need to fill out a roster with reliable everyday starting types. And if you've got a Connor Griffin, I think a Derek Curiel is a great fit to add to that lineup. And I'm just a big fan of this class.
Okay. Next question up, I believe is about a certain UCLA player. Okay. Cal Randall, SP conversion question? Is he closing for the Cardinals by June 27th? I'll take that part. That never moved that fast. You know, it's every year we talk about, oh, this is a fast mover. It's really very rarely a guy moves that fast in a year. But Carlos, Cal Randall, do you think he could be a starter, or is that a pure reliever?
No. He has not made a single start in his college career. I think this is a straight reliever. I think he has maybe the best fastball in the class. We put an 80 on it. Metrically, it's outstanding. Performance-wise, it's outstanding. Everything beyond the fastball, there are real questions. There is questions about the depth to his arsenal. There are questions about the strike throwing. Basically, every single scout we talked to this spring think that Cal Randall is a pure reliever. I don't think that makes this pick any less exciting. I think this is the range where you take players like that, but I would be pretty shocked if he got a significant runtime as a starter at the next level, and I'd be even more shocked if he actually panned out as a starter. I think he is destined to pitch as a reliever with a high usage fastball, and we'll see what else he can figure out beyond that.
Next up, we have a question about signability or signings in the top on the day one, day two. Question is, are you hearing any rumors on top 8 round picks not signing? Carlos, I will keep going back to you, but Ben's on deck.
Yeah, I don't know if Ben has heard anything. I haven't heard anything now. I feel like some years we do hear whispers of like, hey, this player, it sounds like this team drafted them blind. Like, do you think they're going to be able to get it done? We'll hear some whispers of like agents trying to figure out like what the expected bonuses are for players in that pool. Like when Angel Cervantes didn't sign, immediately we started hearing like, oh, the Pirates might have taken him without a deal lined up, like not sure if they're going to get this one done. We've not heard any, or I've not heard any, I should say, right now. So at this point, I'm kind of expecting the teams to have done their homework. And I will just reiterate, like until we hear otherwise, anyone who's drafted in the first 10 rounds, we're going to assume that they're signing. It's a 98.5% sign rate in the bonus pool era for players in the top 10 rounds. So no, I've not heard any whispers so far, but maybe something will come up with a medical. Maybe we'll hear of a team that did pop a player blind, called their bluff and it didn't pan out, but I haven't heard anything so far.
Ben, to ask you, is the different kind of the different world of college baseball right now, as far as NIL, as far as the new eligibility that'll come in next year and all, anything you think that might affect signability for any of these players?
For guys drafted in the top 10 rounds, I don't think so, because those guys were taken already. The teams negotiate with these players before they're taking them, like Carlos said, in almost every instance. So I don't think so. And maybe, you know, for guys who fell further into the draft, maybe. But even the guys that were taken after, say, like 12, 13, especially after like the 15th round, a lot of the times the teams are just taking those guys as a backup plan in case something really goes wrong with one of their earlier picks, and they know those guys are probably going to school anyway.
Okay, next up, I think we have an Angels question. Here we go. Was Mozeliak's influence shown in this draft, or do you think this was the plan for the most part for the Angels? Carlos, any thoughts?
Yeah, I'll just say that we mentioned this in our mock drafts throughout the spring. I had heard the Angels connected to more high school players this spring than previous years. So if the question is basically like, oh, they took a high school player finally, it's clearly not someone who's on a fast track path. I would have expected, or not expected, but I would have been open to the idea that the Angels do that before the change in the front office. I don't think that the Angels draft strategy for years has been dictated by people in the scouting department or the general manager. It definitely feels like that's been something that's dictated from the top down. So it feels like this year there was just maybe less of an urgency or a demand to take that sort of profile, because clearly Jared Grindlinger, who I believe was the second youngest player drafted this year, is not going to be a fast mover. I'm really excited by that pick from them, just because it signals a shift in who you're targeting at the top of the draft. I like the idea of the Angels maybe buying into some more projection and dreaming on upside a little bit more. They did go college heavy after that, so maybe if you want some fast movers, you can get them in later rounds. But in general, I just think that teams should be taking whoever they believe is the best player available, regardless of organizational positional needs, regardless of ETA. I think it really just leads you to bad draft picks if you do that consistently. And the Angels, I don't think they did that this year.
Okay, next up, someone wants to know about the Royals. The question we have asks, the Zion Rose pick we talked about is the talking point. But how do you grade the rest of the Royals draft? We don't grade them yet. Too early for that. But what do you think about the Royals draft? Both of you, whichever one wants to has deeper
thoughts. Any thoughts?
Yeah.
The Zion Rose pick in particular was a confusing one for me. I thought it was look, Zion Rose, I think, is a good prospect. I think if you take him in the second round, all right, that makes sense. To reach up and take him that high, the sixth overall pick, kind of reminded me a little bit. I mean, they're obviously totally different players. But when the Royals drafted Frank Mozzicato as high as they did a few years back, I think Zion Rose is a good prospect. But to take him that high, the opportunity cost of how many other talented players are there ahead of him doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. And then you look at the rest of their draft, it's like, okay, well, if you're taking him and you're getting him a big underslot deal, well, there should be a ton of other, overslot, like really good talent coming up behind them. And it just, it seemed like a fine rest of the draft, but it didn't have the other picks in the draft coming behind Zion Rose to make up for taking a guy like him that high in the draft. So that was one of the drafts where I didn't really get it.
Carlos, what about you?
Yeah, I think a lot of what Ben said there makes sense. I think they're, our players like Eric Booth Jr. and Jacob Lombard, who I'd have been really excited to get at number six. We heard some whispers about whether or not actually the Royals were going to be in a position that the Angels have been in for previous years. Like, were they going to be, I don't know if I would say forced, but like, I don't know if there was a lot of pressure or a desire to take a college player with that pick specifically, but we'd heard that as a potential possibility. They go Zion Rose at 30, they do get Zion Rose at six. They get Taylor Rabe at 30. Taylor Rabe was a player that I think could have fit in the 15 to 20 range on talent. Jack Slidham at 56, I imagine, is going to be an overslot deal there. That's where some of the money should be expected to go. They have Dominic Batista in the fourth round. And then looking down at the ninth round, Camden Johnson out of Oklahoma. The fact that they took a college player with that tool set and talent, the fact that Camden Johnson slid there, I think, is interesting, but I would imagine he's an overslot deal there as well. I do think Zion Rose is a really good player. I think he's got contact skills, athleticism. A lot of this for me will depend on, like, can he play center field at the next level? That maybe will change his profile a little bit more. But even still, I think I would have rather taken a guy like Eric Booth Jr. at that pick, and they pass on him to take Rose.
We have more questions. We'll talk about that, and we'll talk about the draft and the production of the draft right after spring.
Big second half of the season coming up. There might be a hot ticket, a rivalry series, a sold out experience that you need to get your hands on. And SeatGeek is the spot for that. You can find good pricing. They help you with the pricing. Green dot, good. Red dot, not as good. And they help you with your view of the seat for some big matchups coming up in August, September, and eventually leading up to playoffs.
Why would you not use SeatGeek? If you want to view from your seat, you want to know if it's a good seat, if it's a good deal, it has all of it on the app. It's easy to use. It's one click, boom. You buy the tickets, they send them right to you. You get them on the app, and then you can go check out whatever game, whatever you're a fan of, you can go to, whether it's baseball, whether it's concerts, whatever you're into, you can find a ticket, and you can always try to find the green dot on SeatGeek.
And for MLB tickets, you can get 10% off with that promo code we're running all season long, Territory10. That's Territory10 off your next set of MLB tickets at SeatGeek. Make sure you click the link in the description to download the app and have the code automatically added to your account so you can use it later.
We are back for the final sprint. Before we get back to some more questions, I did want to ask you, Ben, I want to kind of tee you up on this one because we were there. Carlos was on the broadcast. I was in person there. The draft, as far as you've seen, obviously many of these drafts, but we have some hiccups this year. We had the commissioner announcing the number one pick in the draft as Rock Chulewski. We also had the set being taken down as the draft continued, something I just can't imagine the NBA or the NFL having in round two or round three or round, for the NFL, round six, that they said, oh, we're just going to dismantle this while we keep making picks. What can be improved? How does this need to get better in future years?
Man, where to even start on that one? It was, I understand MLB wants to tear down the draft even more, but like maybe they could wait until after we're through at least a couple rounds of the draft to start physically tearing things down and having a demolition site around the draft. You're putting it on a Saturday afternoon, competing with major league games. Then the second round, then the second day of the draft is competing not only with major league games, but also with the futures game. What are we doing with this? And then you have the draft on, okay, tune into this channel to watch the first 10 picks of the draft, then change the channel after 10 picks to watch it on another channel, and then flip it over to a streaming service after 40 minutes. Like, I don't understand. This is not like MLB's first year having a draft show, right? Like, why are we doing it this way? Like, it's been better in recent years. It shouldn't be the product that they showed. It should not be at that level.
But we could talk about that more, but we do want to get to more of your questions. We have a Marlins draft question coming up next. Question is, what do you think of the Marlins draft? Of course, Jacob Lombard is the big one, but what about the pitcher they drafted? They took a lot of pitchers. Carlos.
Yeah, I mean, Jacob Lombard is kind of the headliner of this for obvious reasons, getting a number five player in the class and a member of the consensus top six that we have, potentially the biggest upside player in this class. I don't know, Ben, if you think he definitely is, or if you would include guys like Justin LeBron, or maybe you'd say Rock Chalowski still has some of the highest upside, but he's certainly in that conversation with a very small group of other players who can rival him if everything goes well. So I think he's the headliner for a reason. Ethan Kleinschmidt, Ryan Peterson at 52 and 71, I think those are solid picks. Like, neither of them get me as fired up as like the high school arms that teams like the Braves or the Rangers or the Padres took. But I think where they took those players makes a lot of sense. I think the Wesley Roberson pick in the fourth round is interesting for a quick twitch player. Eric Guevara actually in the seventh round, that's a pick I really like in this class. The one that I don't quite understand is Rentaro Sacchi in the eighth. I mean, we were asking about Rentaro regularly throughout the spring because he came in as such a prominent name, obviously, from Japan. But I don't know what sort of profile or value you're getting with Sasaki. So I would have liked maybe other shots on power in that range for players who maybe have a chance to play other defensive positions. I think Fabio Bundy is a really fun name in the 11th round. So there are some players who I like throughout this draft. But for me, I'm just looking at Jacob Lombard here and hoping he can hit, because if he can hit, it won't matter who else the Marlins took in this class. He could be that good.
Yeah, I love the Marlins getting Jacob Lombard at 14. Like, Grady Emerson is the best high school player in this class. If I had to take another high school player after him, it would be Jacob Lombard. And Eric Booth Jr. and Jared Grinlinger and Trevor Connan, they went ahead of him. Those are good players too. I'd rather have Jacob Lombard. True shortstop, great defender, great instincts, great actions at the position, great runner, explosive, bat speed, power. There is some swing and miss in there that I think he's going to have to keep in check, and I think he will. I like the way the swing works for the most part. It's not like it's a big, long swing. I think he has a good understanding of the strike zone too. I think we're going to look back at this pick within probably even the next year, maybe when we're watching him in the futures game next year, which hopefully is not at the same time as the draft, obviously, but and look back and say, oh, wow, he probably should have gone a little bit higher than he did.
So our next question is a fun one from Uncle Ted. Question asks, who's the first to the show? Okay, we'll each make a prediction. Ben, who do you think from this draft makes it to the big league first?
I mean, Rock Chalowski is probably the easy one, right?
Yes.
tough to bet against him. Normally, I would just say whoever the Angels took. That's not going to be the case this year. But yeah, I mean Rock Chalowski, 2023 high school class. Like, we've already seen guys like, and I guess all these other college guys are for the most part in that same class. But you know, we're seeing guys like Kevin McGonigal and Bryce Eldridge and some of these other guys who are already in the big leagues. Like, I think had Rock Chalowski signed out of high school, there's a chance we're already seeing him in the big leagues. Mm-hmm. I imagine the White Sox are going to push him pretty quickly, and there's a chance we might see him as soon as next year.
Okay, Carlos, what about you?
I think Rock Chalowski is a. Okay. I think Chalowski is a pretty no-brainer answer, to be honest. I mean, I don't really think Jackson Flora is a fast-track pitcher. I've heard people mention him. I actually think he's going to need a little bit of development time. I wouldn't go with a guy like Von Lackey because he's a catcher. I think Grady Emerson could move quicker than people think because he's one of these elite pure hitting high school players, but I wouldn't bet on the high school player. I mean, I could see offensive oriented players like Chris Akopian maybe moving quickly. Honestly, Cal Randall, I think, would be a pretty decent option if you're drafting him as a straight reliever. There are probably a couple relievers that would qualify there. Thomas Burns out of Texas maybe is a fit. Hunter Dietz could maybe be a fit to move quickly. The Yankees 35th overall pick with their first round pick. So those would be some other names beyond just the boring Rock Chalowski answer. But I do think Rock Chalowski is just one of the most MLB ready players. And there could be good reason for the White Sox to want to move him pretty quickly.
I'll generally agree with you, but I will say I'll make a prediction. Drew Burris, because he's an outfielder. Outfielders move as fast as almost anything. He has 3 years of production at Georgia Tech. He's a good hitter, so he could move fast that way. And the A's are a team that we have seen year after year is willing to move team players quickly. We saw Nick Kurtz obviously go almost straight to the big leagues less than a year. So Drew Burris is my prediction on that.
That's now, a good one.
Another question here about the Orioles. Question asks, JJ was tentative about the Orioles taking outfielders. They took two and Kevin Roberts Jr., who is an outfielder generally, but is listed as a first baseman in their top four rounds. What are your thoughts on the draft, JJ? I will say that I just think that the Orioles have seen more success when they go to other demographics than when they go outfield, outfield, outfield. But I don't want to be the only one. Carlos, what do you think about their draft and kind of how it shaped up?
I love it. I mean, they're picking seven. They get Eric Booth Jr. at that pick. I think he should have been off the board maybe three picks in front of where they were selecting. I think this is a more balanced offensive profile than some of the players they've taken in the past that I do think have been a little bit more risky. For me, I don't see a lot of risk in Eric Booth Jr.'s profile. I know people like to throw the Mississippi High School hitting label on him. I don't think that should really exist anymore. I think the bat-to-ball skills are exceptional. I like Ty Head at 46 where they got him. It's kind of surprising to me how good Ty Head's contact skills are for a player who has hit under 300 multiple years. But the way that you hear scouts and analysts talk about his pure hitting ability is pretty impressive. He's a really good defender as well. I know Ben is probably a big fan of the fourth round pick and Kevin Roberts Jr. So maybe I'll throw it to him and let him talk more about that pick, but contact guys up top and then some big swings on tools later.
Yeah. Kevin Roberts Jr. in the fourth round, really like that pick. He's still 17 years old, dynamic athlete, physicality, 6'5" outfielder who can run, throw. He's got big bat speed, power is probably even more power coming. Again, he's still 17 years old. Still more space on his frame to fill out. And even though he is a longer levered hitter, typically that comes with a lot of swing and miss, his track record on the showcase circuit of making contact and having a very patient approach, taking his walks, knowing the strike zone is pretty good. I think a lot better than a lot of people give him credit for. I'm not surprised, obviously, that Eric Booth Jr. went ahead of him in the draft based on what we were hearing. I also would not be surprised if we look up 10 years down the road and Kevin Roberts Jr. ends up being the better player.
So many good questions today. Thank you all for joining us on the Baseball America Hot Sheet Show. Thank you for all your questions. We love getting to answer your questions. Do subscribe to Baseball America on the YouTube channel, but also do check out baseballamerica.com where we have more content than you can possibly consume about the 2026 MLB draft, and we will get you ready for the 27 draft already as well. For Ben, for Carlos, I'm JJ. So long, everybody.